The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Time for Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. We have a very interesting show in store for you today. We're going to spend the first half hour talking about the world of special education, looking at it both from two perspectives on the front lines, a legal perspective and also the perspective of a special education practitioner. Then we're going to spend the second half hour talking about professional development in these difficult times, speaking with a career coach about how to achieve your own personal and professional success, and also with a clinical psychologist to talk about how to effectively leverage your professional strengths via personal relationships. But we start out our hour with Brian Subers, who is in the suburban Philadelphia office of Fox Rothschild and has represented numerous school entities in his career there, focuses his education, his practice on education in general and special education in particular. So, Brian, welcome to the show, and let's start off by having you talk a little bit about the distinction in the public education sector between general education and special education.
Sure. Thanks, Kevin. Basically, special education refers to specially designed instruction to meet the unique needs of students with disabilities. And you would contrast that with regular education, which is the presentation of the standard academic curriculum using standard teaching methods without any special modifications or changes. Special education is used or implemented for educating disabled students. Regular education is for non-disabled students.
Well, tell us what the law requires for school to provide to the students seeking a special education.
Well, every public school in the country is required to provide special education to eligible students, and that requirement dates back to the early 1970s. And believe it or not, as recently as the early 70s, up to 50% of the disabled students in America were not allowed access to the public schools. And of the remaining 50% that were provided access, they were often segregated in special classrooms and received a subpar education. As a result of that, there were two very important court decisions. They were United States Federal Court District Court decisions out of Pennsylvania, in a case in which my firm was involved, and also out of the District of Columbia. And in those cases, the courts held that the denial of a appropriate public education to disabled students was in violation of their equal protection rights under the 14th Amendment. As a result, a majority of the state, and the courts ordered the state and local school districts to provide the disabled students a free, appropriate public education. As a result,
what's that mean? A free, appropriate education.
Well, a free, appropriate public education is an education that is individually designed to meet the needs of the disabled student. And that, you know, the genesis of that were these court decisions and two very important and controlling federal statutes, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which was enacted in 1975. That's a funding statute that authorizes a grant program that states can voluntarily participate in. In order to participate in that grant program, the states have to comply with the requirements of the IDEA, which include the provision of a free appropriate public education to disabled students. The other important federal act in this area is Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. That's a non-discrimination act, and that basically prevents entities receiving federal funding, including public schools, from discriminating against disabled students.
I see. Well, talk to me about, obviously, the law is focused a lot on access to education, and there's a great number of needs that need to be met in working with special education children. So talk to me about how school districts focus on success after they've provided access.
Well, I mean, you have the access, and once a student is provided access, they're required to be provided a free appropriate public education, or FAPE. It's a commonly used acronym. Under IDEA, FAPE is an individualized program which is reasonably calculated to provide a student meaningful educational benefit. That's the critical language. Now, the school district is not obligated, it's important to note, to provide the best educational program available for disabled students. It's required to provide an appropriate education, an education that provides meaningful educational benefit. There's no specific result required under the law. You don't have to guarantee, or the schools don't have to guarantee success, but the program has to be calculated to provide meaningful benefit. That benefit has to be more than trivial benefit. If the student is not progressing in his or her educational program, the school must react to that. The school must revisit the program and revise the program as necessary to provide the student the opportunity to benefit from that program.
I see. Well, you talked about two relevant laws, IDEA and then Section 504, the Rehabilitation Act. Talk to me about the obligations under each of those to have a free and appropriate public education.
Well, as I indicated earlier, under IDEA, you're required to provide a free appropriate public education that is reasonably calculated to provide the student meaningful educational benefit. Under Section 504, because that's a non-discrimination statute, it's stated slightly differently. 504, as I stated, prohibits public schools from discriminating against students. And the basic obligation under 504, like under IDEA, is to provide FAPE, a free appropriate public education. But it's defined slightly differently. And under 504, FAPE is the provision of regular education or special education that meets the needs of the individual disabled student as adequately as the needs of non-disabled or regular education students are met, so that you're not discriminating between the disabled and regular education students.
I see. Well, talk to me a little bit about eligibility. I imagine it gets very sticky to figure out who's eligible for what under the special education law here.
Under IDEA, there are specific criteria as to who is eligible to receive special education. And there's two basic requirements. The first requirement is you have to fall within one of 13 defined disability categories. And they are autism, deafness, deaf blindness, emotional disturbance, hearing impairment, mental retardation, multiple disabilities, orthopedic impairment, other health impairment, specific learning disability, speech or language impairment, traumatic brain injury, and visual impairment, which would include blindness. Now, so you have to fall within one of those categories of disability, and as a result of that disability, you must require specially designed instruction or instruction that is modified, the modifications to the regular education curriculum to benefit from your program. So there's a two-part test under IDEA. Under Section 504, you don't have to fall within a specific category of disability. You don't have to be within one of those specific 13 identified categories. Section 504 applies more generally to students with any physical or mental disorder that affects a major life activity. And the main differences there are, in addition to not falling within one of those 13 categories, you don't necessarily have to require specially designed instruction. As I indicated, FAPE under Section 504 can include just regular education. So 504 has a broader coverage than Section IDEA, or than under IDEA.
Now, Brian, I got about 2 minutes left before we have to break here. Tell me a little bit about those parents who wanted to educate their kids in the private school system. How does special education law impact them?
Well, the school districts have an obligation to locate, identify, and evaluate all eligible students. And once those students are identified, the school district has an obligation to develop an individualized education program for those students. That's the FAPE obligation. It's actually the child find obligation is locating them, and the FAPE obligation is providing them the educational program. That initial obligation to find those students who need special education applies to all students, no matter where they're enrolled. It applies to students in private and public schools. So the obligation is for the school district to make reasonable attempts to locate these children. And the way they do that is they advertise in newspapers, they post on their website, they put notices in private schools notifying parents of the rights of disabled students. If a parent suspects their child has a disability, they should contact their local school district. At that point, the local school district has an obligation to act, and that would be to evaluate the student to see if they're eligible for special education, and if so, to provide them that free appropriate public education.
I see. Well, in wrapping up, Brian, tell us a little bit about how to get in contact with you and where people can maybe learn a little bit more about this area of the law if they're interested.
Well, I can be contacted. I mean, my office is located in Bluebell, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Our office, our firm has 15 offices nationwide. We have, particularly in the Philadelphia area, substantial expertise in education law. I can be contacted at bsubers@foxrothschild.com. My information is also available on my firm's website, which is www.foxrothschild.com.
Terrific. We'll be joined by Brian Subers, who's an expert in the area of special education law. We're going to be back in just a minute to continue our conversation on this subject by talking to a special education teacher from Texas. Keep it here on Capital Thinking.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has 46 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
It's all about action.
Touchdown!
Scores.
Taking a look at the NBA tonight.
Highlights.
He's broken loose.
Headlines.
Big trade in the NFL this afternoon.
When you are looking to talk sports, look no further than the Voice America Sports Network. We bring you some of the biggest names and all the sports news you can handle, whether it's basketball,
off the glass,
football,
come on, football,
golf, racing, or the Olympics. We've got you covered. We'll even cover tailgating. To the Voice America Sports Network. It's all things sports.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come
to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Pat and Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Pat and Boggs, straight, unfiltered. Pat and Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Pat and Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Pat and Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back. We wanted to continue our discussion on special education. We spent some time in the last segment talking about it from a legal perspective, but we wanted to hear from somebody on the front lines who's actually a day-to-day special education teacher to understand the challenges that they face and how the law and policy intersect in the classroom. So joining us from Texas is Jill Sandoval. Jill has graduated from Southern Methodist University and has a teaching certificate from the University of Texas at Arlington, and she's taught history in the Rio Grande Valley and then special education for several years throughout the state of Texas. So, Jill, welcome to the show, and I hope that you are done your regular school year and have begun a short break in the summer, right?
Well, teaching's a year-round job, so I'm getting ready for next year.
All right. Well, very good. Well, tell us, as a special education teacher, why don't you walk us through a little bit what your classroom is like and what types of students you interact with on a daily basis as a public special education teacher?
Well, I'm teaching at the elementary level now, and I teach grades K through 5. My students have all sorts of disabilities, from learning disabilities, autism, intellectual disabilities, emotional disturbances, and attention difficulties. And I do resource, which means that we pull the students out. And then I also do inclusion, which means I go into the general education classroom to be with my students with their regular education teachers.
Very good. Well, I know you grew up with a learning disability. So tell us, how has that impacted your teaching as a professional?
Well, school for me was not a whole lot of fun. I love learning, but the school experience was stinky because I had trouble expressing myself through normal outlets like worksheets and tests and all those multiple choice things, and it was just a nightmare for me. And I never understood what my teacher wanted me to do. We were both speaking English, but I didn't understand what she said. So with my students, I remember how it felt, and I try to help them understand that having a disability is not an educational death sentence. I was able to get out of special education in high school and go on and have a normal college career and everything else, and that we need to find ways to work around it. Coping is the key strategy, because your learning disability or your emotional disability does not go away, even with medicine. If you choose to take medicine. But life is not modified, and life is not accommodated, so it's important for me as a teacher to get the children ready to become productive citizens at whatever level that they can best achieve their potential.
Well, Jill, I know one of the trends in the special needs area has to be just that the volume of students that are put in special education has to be growing. But talk to me about some of the trends that are there. I know there's also a lot of talk about how to effectively intermingle special needs children with the broader school population.
Well, when I was in school in the 80s in special education, children who had difficulties learning were immediately tested for special ed. There was not this receiving of extra help to try to keep them out of special ed. And one of the most important and exciting things that I see happening is called response to intervention. We teachers call it RTI for short. Parents, teachers, the school administrators, the counselors meet together before referring a child to special ed, to make a plan for the kid. And the teacher could start pulling him for extra tutoring and making records of what progress he's making with that extra help. And then if he's still not progressing, they might meet again and decide to put him into a small group of tutoring programs that are research-based and very intensive. There's a program called Read Write and Math Intervention. And if he's still not making progress, then he would be referred for special education testing. But all of this documentation has to be done to make sure that we as a school, we are, as teachers, are meeting their needs. Because when you do get a special education label, that can dramatically affect your school career and your life. The point of RTI is to document what teachers in schools are doing. Another change that I see is with inclusion. Inclusion means that the students with a special need are put into a general education classroom. They used to call it mainstreaming, but now what we try to do as special ed teachers is be more of a helper teacher to a regular education teacher. When I was in school, the children with disabilities went somewhere else. A lot of times they didn't get to interact with other kids in the general education setting. And it's really a paradigm shift. Before, the students with disabilities were special ed students. They didn't intermingle with the non-special ed students. And now they have an opportunity to become part of their class and participate with what their class is learning, even if their participation is limited due to disabilities. There's a lot of teamwork that goes into it. General ed and special ed teachers have to form a sort of parenting relationship, almost like a mother and a father, where we work together to benefit our kids, but we might go about it different ways. And I think the idea of least restrictive environment has changed over the years. We try not to pull the kids out for resource unless they really need it, or to put kids into a severe and profound disabilities class unless they really need it. The key with inclusion is that the special education teacher and the regular education teacher work with special ed kids and the general ed kids at the same time. As you know, children with special needs are now part of the accountability system for state testing.
Right.
And that is a big, huge thing with No Child Left Behind. Now special education teachers are writing individual education plans, or called IEPs, for students in a way that we can align what our goals are for them with the state standards.
I see. Well, you talk about, it's interesting, you talk about a paradigm shift just a minute ago, and mm-hmm. it sounds like even the terminology has changed from mainstreaming to inclusion. I'm sure there's some differences in the concepts, but obviously maybe the change in terminology was because if you weren't being mainstreamed, maybe that was something that was pejorative if you were being separated out. But mm-hmm. tell me, from a student's perspective these days, what does it mean to be in this sort of inclusion program in special education?
Well, the great thing about inclusion is that they feel like a part of their class. They're not being pulled out with kids of all different grade levels. They're in a home room, and they get to do what the other kids get to do, even if it looks a little bit different, even if their output looks a little bit different. When I started working as a special education inclusion teacher, I was worried about the kids being bullied or teased because of their differences. But, you know, children are amazingly flexible. And these kids that are growing up now have had special ed kids in their classes since kindergarten. And they might not know exactly why the kid is different. But the beautiful thing about inclusion is, when I go into a general education teacher's classroom, I'm not only working with kids that are on my caseload, but I'm working with all of the kids that might need special help, that might need manipulatives, that might need things presented in a different way. And, I've seen kids react to that without questioning, or that isn't fair that he gets to do it different. They accept that because they've grown up with it, and I think that that's just a fabulous thing for all of the kids.
And what does inclusion mean with the teacher workforce?
Well, inclusion can mean a bunch of different things. When I'm working with a teacher, a general education teacher, I usually let her lead the way because it is her classroom and these are her kids. We're not separating the general ed from special ed as much anymore. Some teachers, you know, they want me to come in and walk around the room and make sure I'm helping kids that look like they're having problems with the concepts that are being taught. Other teachers want to split the class. We're in the same room. She's teaching the same subject I'm teaching, but it might be presented in different ways. And I might take general ed kids and special ed kids that are having trouble with the concept. Another type, the type that I like most actually, is team teaching. We're teaching as one person, but with two voices and two perspectives. And a lot of the kids in general education benefit from the use of manipulatives and pictures and the type of tricks that I use as a special education teacher. They benefit just as well as the special ed kids. So we get together and plan as teachers, and we figure out how we're going to grade and how we're going to present things.
Jill, tell me about, we've got a couple minutes left, give me a sense of what advice you would offer to parents who are either, just entering a child into the special education system or are facing challenges on an ongoing basis. What should they be thinking about on as they get prepared for a new school year this fall?
I think the most important thing that you as a parent can understand is that the kid is not being special because he or she wants to be a pain or wants to be annoying. If you have an emotional disturbance or a learning disability, your brain is wired differently, and so you're going to react differently. And school can be very frustrating for kids with disabilities. It can be overwhelmingly frustrating. And so I know a lot of parents deal with homework. Homework is a huge issue. And some parents, I mean, I can tell as a teacher when the parent has done the homework. That's how some parents choose to deal with the fact that the kid is crying over the homework. And other parents just give up. I think it's important to work with the teacher and decide what's best for the kid by calling and saying, hey, you know, this homework is too hard and my kid's crying all night. And work with the teacher so that we can find a solution to make sure that the kid is getting the most out of school and the most out of homework at home. And also developing behavior plans. A lot of times kids are different at school and kids are different at home. And so if we can work together to keep things the same, to discipline the child the same, to work with the child's behavioral issues the same, then that can be very effective in helping
Great.
The child grow as a person.
Jill, I appreciate that advice for parents. We are going to have to wrap up there. We've been joined by Jill Sandoval, special education teacher from Texas, talking about special education on the front lines, and terrific perspective there. We're going to shift gears when we come back, but we've got a commercial break here. Some more Capital Thinking lies ahead in just a minute.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
What's your name worth? The loss of a single patent, trademark, or copyright can cost millions. Make sure your intellectual property is protected. Trust Patton Boggs to manage and protect your most important assets.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjo Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjo Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattenboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattenboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, now we're going to switch gears and talk about career development for the next half hour. And joining us is a good friend to the show and somebody that has been personally instrumental in my career development, and that's Cordell Parvin. Cordell's been with us before on the show, and he's enjoyed a career that spans more years than he'd probably like me to mention here on the air. But he started first as a national construction law expert and practiced in both Virginia and in Texas with the nationally known firm of Jenkins and Gilchrist. And while at Jenkins and Gilchrist, Cordell also discovered that as much as he loved practicing the law, he loved the opportunity to mentor other attorneys and help them develop their skills and their career plan over time. And so he gradually morphed into a career coach, an extraordinarily successful one who's focused a lot of his attention on helping attorneys develop. So, Cordell, welcome back to the show. How are things in Dallas?
Oh, thanks, Kevin. Quite warm, as you might imagine.
Well, good. Speaking of Dallas, I was there ever so briefly last week, and the folks I was with were giddy about the Mavericks returning home with their championship trophy and the parade that was to come on Thursday. I couldn't help but notice that you had a blog post last week that talked about more you gotta believe, and you talked a little bit about Dirk Nowitzki and what we can learn about success from Dirk Nowitzki. So tell me, what, besides a patented fadeaway jumper, what can Dirk Nowitzki tell me about my career?
Well, I was fascinated because those who watched the tournament, Game 2, the Mavericks came from way behind at Miami and won, and Dirk made the winning shot. Literally the next game, NBC had this video, and it was of Dirk and his 17-year coach. And the video was actually shot the afternoon of that second game, and Dirk is alone in the arena shooting baskets with that coach, helping him and giving him ideas of what to do. That,
very good.
That was a great example of someone who was deliberately practicing and getting feedback. And all the studies that have been done worldwide say those two things in combination are what make people excel at what they do.
You know, Cordell, it's a great observation because there's been so much coverage in the last couple of weeks about Dirk's work ethic and what he learns every offseason, and then a great deal of criticism about LeBron James, who basically saying that he's a tremendous talent who's not capitalizing on that talent by working hard, particularly in the offseason and between games, that he enjoys the lifestyle of the NBA without necessarily enjoying the hard work that you have to get to the top level. And that sort of leads me to my next question, which is, you spend a lot of time studying what it means to be a successful person, what it means to be successful in business, and you tend to hone in on the key differences. So tell us a little bit about what separates the haves from the have-nots here.
Well, if I were to put it into just a short sentence, the haves, the people who excel, think optimistically and plan purposely. They know what they want with clarity. They have a game plan to get there. They execute on their plan. And whether it's sports or law, like your law firm, they build a team. Charlie Miller, your partner here in Dallas, is the success that he is in large part because he's done all of that and built a team. And I think the Dallas Mavericks are, again, an example of a good team.
Sure. Well, so that's somebody like Charlie Miller, who you use an example. He's long known where he wants to go in the world, and I think that makes it a lot easier for him to get there. He got a roadmap. I'm sitting here at my desk broadcasting. I've got my two-page plan taped to my desk of what I want to achieve this year. But what about the people that are just coming to you, and they're trying to figure out, for lack of a better term, what they want to be when they grow up?
Well, that's interesting. There's a lawyer, I've told this story many times, and I probably told it to you, Kevin. There's a lawyer from my old law firm, now Allison Rowe. She got married. She was Allison McCormick when she was at my firm. And Allison sat down with me for lunch one time and said, Cordell, if I have to keep doing securities arbitrations the rest of my career, I'm going to quit practicing law. And I said, Allison, tell me what you really would love to do. What is your passion? What are you passionate about and have talent and there's a client need? And she couldn't really think of anything. She had a very clear understanding of what she didn't want to do, didn't really understand what she did want to do. At the end of the lunch, she said, Cordell, I have an idea, but you have to promise not to laugh. And I said, I promise I won't. She said, I want to be an equine lawyer and represent racehorse owners. And I said, that's a great plan. Allison's now practicing in Fort Worth. All she does is represent people who own horses. It was, you know, Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, said companies need to have an intersection of passion, talent, and need. Lawyers or whatever skills the business people are in need to have an intersection of talent, passion, and need.
Very interesting. Well, I know once you help them get the plan, then the issue becomes time. I know both you and I, Cordell, are big fans of David Allen's Getting Things Done, and I know you'll
Absolutely.
Chuckle when I tell you that I'm going to spend 9 hours at a Getting Things Done seminar tomorrow trying to learn more about how to more effectively use my time. But I know one of the challenges you face in coaching people is them saying, well, I have a plan. I don't have time to execute that plan. So what do you do with those folks?
Well, first of all, I think most people who say they don't have time, it's not a time management issue as much as an attitude issue. As you know, I started practicing law in Roanoke, Virginia, and at a point in time had my own firm. If I said I didn't have time to do business development when I was busy doing billable work, my family would have suffered as a result. So, you know, I think when people know the what they want to do and the why they want to do it, the how comes really creatively, and people make time. When lawyers say to me, I can't find time, I tell them they're using the wrong verb. The verb is make time. And you are a great example, Kevin, of someone who makes time to do things with your family, makes time to do things with clients and so forth. So it's about making time. I also think people need to break down their goals into small components. And you probably have done this quite well, where you actually plan each week. Here's what my game plan for next week. The smaller the components, and finding a way to be accountable, which you also have done quite well, is how you're going to be able to make time and actually do things when you're really busy.
Cordell, flattery will get you everywhere on this show.
Thank you.
Well, it's summer. We've just seen sort of the end of commencement season at colleges and universities, and I love when NBC News sort of runs this segment on the nightly news with wit and wisdom from various celebrities and political figures speaking at a commencement address. So I want to say, Cordell Parvin, you're speaking at my alma mater, Syracuse University, upstate New York. It's a fine day in May. You're the commencement speaker talking to a couple thousand graduates. What is it that you want to tell them about creating a pathway to success?
Well, you know, I've never been asked to speak at any commencement, even as low as grade school. But if I was asked to speak, and obviously law school would be something I would really enjoy, there's this tendency of people graduating to think that learning has stopped. And in truth, particularly in law, but I think every other field, learning has only just begun. And so those who succeed, I love watching graduation speeches. If anyone on the call or on the show gets a chance to listen to Steve Jobs speak at Stanford in 2005, it's just absolutely terrific. But Steve Jobs is such a great example of someone who sees things that no one else is seeing. And he sees things and puts things together in ways that people have not thought of before. They say that Apple never does surveys of people because if they did surveys, people would not even think of the things that Apple is trying to put together. And that's true whether you're in law, whether you're in sports, whether you're in music, or in business. Finding a way to put things together, and which is kind of a right brain thinking, is very, very important. So I would tell students, it's time to keep learning. It's time to think creatively, think positively, and act purposely.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that about Apple. I mean, I didn't know that I couldn't live without an iPad until it came out.
Exactly.
But it didn't take me long to figure out, boy, I've got to have one, and you know, I towed it everywhere.
Well, the book that I recommend you and all of your listeners read is The Innovation Secrets of Steve Jobs. It's my favorite book for this year.
Put that on my summer reading list for the beach. Well, so Cordell, comparing you to a personal trainer, you obviously can't work out for us. You can give people tips and you can help them along the way as a career coach. So for somebody who's listening who wants to get the ball rolling, I got about 90 seconds left. Give me a couple first steps they can take to help themselves out.
Well, I think they need to start with a plan and focus on what they want to become. I like to tell people, you know, what do you want to do 5 years from now? Who, in the case of a lawyer, who are your clients? What kind of work are you doing? Think of how old your children will be, and I know your children, so how old will they be? Where will they be in school? And what will you be doing? And then work backwards. So what do you need to do? In fact, you know, we're getting ready to go to the second half of 2011. If your listeners don't have any kind of plan, then they need to start with a plan. What are they going to accomplish the next 6 months?
Indeed. Well, Cordell, I think we're going to wrap things up there, but I want to give you a chance to tell people how to read your blog, listen to your podcast, and catch up on your insights on a more regular basis. So why don't you tell us how we can do that?
Okay. Well, my blog is cordellblog.com. I urge people to subscribe. I think you'll find it valuable. I also have podcasts, which if you get on the blog, you can find how to get me on LinkedIn. I have a Facebook coaching page. I'm on Twitter. And we now have created a video coaching program, which we're getting ready to roll out within the next couple of weeks, which will enable people to have coaching without me in person.
Very good. A virtual Cordell Parvin. That's a scary thought on many levels. Well, Cordell, as always, a pleasure to have you. I do encourage folks to, if you're interested in career development, especially in the legal world, I think Cordell is a fantastic resource and a treasure for all those who use and work with him. We're going to be back, continue this conversation about career development in the legal sector, back with Dr. Cindy in just a moment with more Capital Thinking right ahead.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
From K Street to Wall Street to LaSalle Street, the Patton Boggs team knows how to pull off big business transactions. Come hear what we know. Patton Boggs covers the world.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Interrogatories.
Prima facie.
Pleadings.
Motion for summary judgment.
E-discovery.
Affirmative defense.
Stipulations.
Ex parte.
Amicus brief.
Subpoena.
Litigation is confusing. Trust the litigation team at Patton Boggs to make sense of it all.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, well, we continue our discussions about career development with Dr. Cindy Pladsiewicz. We spoke in the last segment with Cordell Parvin, and Dr. Cindy Pladsiewicz is a person with a fascinating bio and a career that's based on taking attorneys and other professionals in the business world and turning them from good to great. So really well-timed for our segment here today. Dr. Cindy has practiced at a top American law firm and also spent a decade in private practice as a clinical psychologist. She's served in a variety of roles in law firms, including being the chief development officer, and she's also been a teacher, an adjunct professor on occasion at Southern Methodist University. So, Dr. Cindy, welcome back to the show. How are things treating you in June?
Well, Kevin, it's great to be back on the show. June is a wonderful month. Great weather here in Dallas.
Great. More like 110, I bet.
Yeah, more like 110.
Dr. Cindy, I see the ABA Journal recently referred to you as being on the cutting edge of applying positive psychology to lawyer development. I think that that's actually meant as a compliment, but tell me a little bit about positive psychology.
Well, it's funny, and that article was interesting, too, because I think they were very intrigued with the idea of a psychologist doing anything positive with lawyers. Positive psychology is a wonderful new field. It's really come into its own in the past 10 years. And unlike traditional psychology, which is the study of what is wrong with people, this is the study of what is right with people. So what is it that lets people lead meaningful and fulfilling lives and cultivate what's best within them and just be more successful, whether it's in their family, their work, or play? And there's a whole science that's being built around this that's really exciting.
Very good. Well, talk to me a little bit about what you're doing to help lawyers identify how to make themselves more successful.
Well, I am using a lot of principles from positive psychology, as are some others. And the one that I'd love to talk a little bit about today is using what we call strengths-based talent management. And that's just the idea that, I don't know about you, Kevin, but whenever I got a performance evaluation, they'd probably talk for about 2 minutes about the good stuff, and then it was all the things I needed to change.
Not me. There was never anything bad in mind.
I think we probably worked for different people.
there was plenty. They usually had to run onto a second page of deficiencies to be corrected. I think it might have been called.
And you know, what's really unfortunate about that is had they talked to you about what you were good at, about your strengths, or talked to me about that, we would have actually become much better employees and been more engaged. And engagement is a concept that we're talking about more and more in psychology now. And it's just the idea that when you are an engaged employee, highly engaged employee, you go the extra mile, and you really do well for the company. And companies that have that focus on strengths and have highly engaged employees are 10% more profitable. As opposed to disengaged employees, and you know who they are, Kevin? Disengaged employees are the people that if you paid them not to come to the office, you would make more money.
Oh, dear. That doesn't sound good. So you're talking about focusing on the positive, Dr.
Right.
Cindy, but when you know, when you do that evaluation, I mean, and the law, the legal field seems ripe with this, as you mentioned. You know, you get that evaluation, and it says you don't know how to take a deposition yet. You don't know how to do this. You don't know how to do that. So, what do you do to replace that focus on? How do you work on focusing on correcting your weaknesses if you're spending a lot of time building up your strengths?
Right. I think you have to look at it a couple ways. First of all, for any lawyer, they have to have competencies. And law firms often spell these out. Here's what you have to be able to do to be a good trial lawyer, to be a good corporate lawyer. You have to obviously have certain basic skills. But what I find in most firms is that by the time a lawyer reaches a certain level, they have most of those basic skills. And to really be successful, they need to start understanding what are they great at, because that's where you really want them focusing the bulk of their time. Yes, they have to meet the basic requirements, but now when we look at how is this, for example, how is a lawyer going to develop client relationships? When I'm looking at that, I don't want to worry about the fact that this is not a great public speaker or that this lawyer is not a great networker at a cocktail party. What I want to look at is what are they great at? And so if they're great at building one-to-one relationships, then I want them to be able to really serve their clients in that way by having good one-to-one time. If they're really excellent at thinking and reflecting, then I want them spending time helping clients to really think through problems. I want to put them in the areas where they're going to be able to use their strengths.
I know we get a lot of lawyers who listen to this, so I have to ask you, as a psychologist, from a psychological perspective, are lawyers different than other people? My wife would say absolutely.
Yes, and I could put you on the spot and ask you what your wife would say.
Argumentative, just to be argumentative.
Yes.
You know, likes to nitpick at things that don't need to be nitpicked at.
Yes, she's right on.
Obsessive about the value of your time.
Yes.
That's probably a good starting point.
Man, your wife could have written some of the research on lawyer personalities, because what we know from a psychological perspective is that lawyers are, and I kind of kiddingly say vis-a-vis normal people, are more pessimistic. They are more time urgent, which means, come on, get on with it, get to the point, let's get there right now. And as you said, she'd say, you know, you worry too much about your time and what you ought to be doing. They are more skeptical. So invariably when I'm giving a talk on this and I say lawyers are more skeptical, someone from the back of the room says, no, we're not. but they are. Lawyers are more skeptical. They're more impatient. And my favorite is, believe it or not, lawyers are more thin-skinned. So they can dish out criticism, but they really can't take it. They're also conflict avoidant. So although they do fine in a courtroom where you have rules and procedures and they really know that they're expert, they're pretty conflict avoidant when it comes to personal relationships. So they tend to duck out of that tough conversation. I could probably do a therapy group just for lawyer spouses and family members that they would find very helpful.
I don't want to suggest to her that things are so bad that she needs to be in a therapy group because of me, but it's interesting the insights that you share. So I have just enough time, Dr. Cindy, for you maybe to tell us a little bit about where people can find out more information about you and about your expertise so that they can figure out how to unlock some secrets to be more successful as a professional or in dealing with attorneys.
Absolutely. And both of those are important, aren't they? So I would first just refer them to my website, which is professional development perspectives.com. They can also get there by my name, CynthiaPladsowitz.com, but I think they'd probably rather type professional development perspective.
All right, professionaldevelopmentperspective.com, right?
Right.
That is the place to go. Dr. Cindy, is always great to have you on. I think we're going to try and do something later this summer with you and Cordell Parvin, a special 1 hour on career development, and we'll get our listeners some details on that in the weeks ahead. But hope you enjoy your weekend. Everyone else, I hope you enjoy your weekend. We'll be back next Thursday from a Capitol riddled with discussions about the state of the budget deficit and the debt ceiling. We'll have a focus on that next week, and we'll see you next Thursday with more Capital Thinking.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network. What do you think of the price of gas these days?
I can't take this!
How'd you like to never have to pay for gas again? Ever?
Yes!
Join a group that helps people save money and make money at the same time. We save money by giving a 10% rebate at the pump based on the average person spending $50 per week. That's $5 per week times 52 weeks or $260.